A Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata. This is R1 News here on Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi 91 FM. Ko Quinton tēnei?
Ko Kaya aho.
Coming up on the show today, we have the Bulletin and Weather with Lily. We talk to Ashok Puduval, CEO of the Massey School of Aviation, about their Bachelor of Aviation, which is the only bachelor's degree in the country not fully funded under the student loan scheme. We speak to student representative Charlie Robinson from the Aotearoa Legal Workers Union about their initiative to involve law students in the union. Edinburgh Realty has issued an amendment to their tenants after sending out an email that violates the Residential Tenancies Act. We speak to OUSA residential representative Patrice Lasueur about the issue. And finally, as always, we speak to Critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer about this week's issue. First up, though, here is Lily with the Bulletin and Weather.
The Radio 1 91 FM News Headlines.
Kia ora koutou, ko Lily Ahu. International tourists from a range of countries are now able to enter New Zealand without the need for a quarantine. Overnight, border restrictions were lifted for over 60 visa-waiving nations. The incomers will still need to be vaccinated and complete COVID tests pre-departure and upon arrival. Alongside the easing at the border, it's the return of schools since the country dropped down from red to orange level, though face masks are still mandatory within the classrooms. Around 30 protesters from the Extinction Rebellion group have halted operations at Takamu coal mine this morning in Southland. Members of the group are blocking the entrance to the mine and are said to have enough provisions to last a couple of days. A protester spokesperson, Eric Kennedy, said they were there to protest a planned extension into a nearby council-owned forestry block by the mine's owner, Bathurst Resources. They believe local and central government are not taking enough action to stop coal mining in New Zealand. New data from NZ's sea rise program has confirmed that parts of the country could see a 30-centimetre sea rise within 10 to 20 years. News Hub reported that sea level rises could be at 1 metre by the year 2060. Climate Change Minister James Shaw has said, while the findings are sobering, the data shows why we must continue to build on the progress this government has made over the last 4 years to build a climate-friendly, prosperous future for Aotearoa. And now, the weather.
The Radio 1 91 FM weather.
It is currently 15 degrees in Dunedin today, with a predicted high of 17 and a low of 11. Tomorrow is looking the exact same with that same high and low. However, it is set to be windier during the afternoon. And that was the weather here on R1 News.
That was Lily with the Bulletin and Weather. Coming up on the show, we speak to Ashok Puduval, CEO of the Massey School of Aviation, about their Bachelor of Aviation, which is the only bachelor's degree in the country that is not fully funded under the student loan scheme. Following that, we speak to Charlie Robinson, student representative on the Aotearoa Legal Workers Union National Executive, about their initiative to further involve law students in the union. Right now, though, we have Luna Vella with People That You Know here on R1 News.
Of the morning after, all the people that you know.
cherry blossoms in Osaka. All the darkness of the morning after. All the people that you know, that you don't really know.
You are listening to R1 News here on Radio 1. Massey University's Bachelor of Aviation is the only bachelor's degree in Aotearoa, New Zealand that is not fully funded under the student loan scheme. Students studying the four-year degree are able to borrow $35,000 per EFTS towards the degree, a total of $140,000 across the 4 years. This, however, is still not enough for students to cover the cost of their degree. According to Massey University, students still face a financial shortfall of up to $30,000 across their degree. This requires students to either save, rely on the generosity of family, or take time off from their degree to work to cover the costs of their training. A story on the Massey University Foundation website tells the story of a student whose family even remortgaged their home to help cover the shortfall. According to Katrina Sutich, Group Manager Tipuna Kopapahere Policy at the Ministry of Education, the caps are designed to prevent both students and the government's financial exposure. Bachelor of Aviation students have a median loan repayment time of 25 years compared to the median of 8 years across all bachelor's degrees. Furthermore, only 25% of aviation students had debt of less than $71,000 upon completion of their degree. This compares to $9,864 for the bottom 25% of students across all bachelor's degrees. The Ministry of Education believes that, quote, if a student wishes to study very high-cost courses like pilot training, it is reasonable to ask them to fund a proportion of these costs themselves, end quote. And the ministry argues that the government already contributes a large amount towards their study. At this stage, there are no plans to change the funding scheme, with the Ministry of Education citing a lack of career opportunities for budding pilots in New Zealand. As with all courses, the cost of studying aviation increases each year. However, this heightened cost isn't absorbed by the student loan, meaning that every year the financial burden on students increases. The maximum borrowing on the student loan has remained at $35,000 per EFTS since 2013, and prior to that, there were no caps on borrowing for aviation, but rather a set maximum that providers could charge. We're joined on the phone now by Ashok Paduval, CEO of the Massey School of Aviation at Massey University. Kia ora, Ashok. It's great to have you on the show.
Kia ora, Quentin, and thank you for having me on the show today.
Yes, thank you for joining us. Ashok, do you believe that the Bachelor of Aviation should be funded under the student loan scheme?
Quentin, before I get to answer this question, I just think I need to mention that the Massey University's Bachelor of Aviation Air Transport Pilot Program is the only program in the country that offers an undergraduate degree with a fully integrated professional flight training qualification. It's operated under a special approval called Equivalence Approval from the Civil Aviation Authority of New Zealand. So it's really a tertiary qualification requiring full-time study and is quite unique, as this kind of an integrated program is not offered anywhere in the Asia-Pacific region. So yes, it should be fully funded under the student loan scheme. And I've been listening to the very detailed explanation you just gave, and I have no disagreement. But may I just add, the funding allocation mechanism is based on equivalent full-time student or EFT. And the way it works for the Bachelor of Aviation is that students are permitted to draw down loans of up to $35,000 per EFT per year. And as you correctly put it, it's a four-year degree course, but it's delivered in 3 years under compressed teaching. So the students can only draw down the amount of loan, like $35,000 per EFT, to a maximum of two EFTs. So That's how you have a restriction of 140,000 for the full course. What this results in, unfortunately, is that students end up going out of pocket or self-fund maybe about $1,000 for their first year of study, $4,000 for the second year of study, and those who do the flight instructor's course in the third year, about $23,000. So that's how you came up to about $30,000 over the full course. So, solutions. I fully agree and appreciate that the government cannot be expected to keep on adding to student loan funding amounts. Yes, they cannot. So the solution is to allow students for the Bachelor of Aviation to draw down on the entire loan for 3 years in a manner in which they don't end up going out of pocket. Because what happens to students in the third year often is that they don't even have to draw down on the entire 35K or 35,000. So they wouldn't go out of pocket if the entire 140,000 for the full course of loan amount is actually distributed over the 3 years, depending on need. In fact, they wouldn't even draw the whole 140. So that would be a solution without increasing the student loan cap.
Are there any other changes that you would like to see made to make this a more accessible degree?
Well, one of the reasons is, of course, one of the changes would be for perhaps to look at the future of different programs that are needed that lead to meaningful employment in the industry. So there is nothing specific other than to say that pilot in employment situation in the aviation sector, which has been limited for the past 2 years due to COVID, that is going to change and has started changing globally pretty rapidly. And from about 2024 onwards, there will be an increasing shortage of pilots by all forecasts from Boeing, Airbus, and IATA, etc. So perhaps look at identifying programs that offer the necessary competencies for meaningful employment in the industry. Our program, for example, has got a very high completion rate, and prior to COVID, our instructors and graduates were being literally snapped up into employment.
Interesting. So, Ashok, do you have an idea of the number of students that defer training for a year or a few years to save up to continue their qualification at a later date?
Quinton, unfortunately, I can't give you a specific answer to this question because we don't have reliable information. This is personal information to many applicants, but I can perhaps respond to this from a different angle. What has been happening is that we have had to almost, turn away certain numbers of students in the selection earlier this year because increasingly students want a tertiary qualification too. And we've also had students who have told us, several students have told us that they cannot join us after they've achieved entry into the program. We have a very robust selection process that actually is very demanding because it's a structured program. And some students have told us that they cannot join because they can't fund the additional amount from the loans available to them, additional to the loans available to them. Particularly distressing is the fact that a number of talented Maori and Pacifica candidates, and we encourage them to join, they have sort of unofficially told us that they cannot join because they can't come up with the additional funding that they require.
And so final question for you, Ashok, is the ministry was citing a lack of employment opportunities in the field in New Zealand. You mentioned before that these opportunities are coming back. What is the market for pilots like globally, and what is your response to the ministry's comment?
Globally, the high-level professional flight training organizations are gearing up and ramping up their deliveries because there's been an increasing demand for this. Boeing, Airbus, and IATA, the International Air Transport Association, have predicted an increasing shortage of pilots from about 2024 onwards, going back possibly within the next 2 to 3 years beyond 24 to the pre-COVID days when there was an acute industry-wide shortage of pilots. New Zealand being a smaller economy, smaller aviation sector, but even in New Zealand, as I said, and perhaps repeating myself, we've had such a demand for pilots pre-COVID that we couldn't find flight instructors to do our training because of the way they were being snapped up by the airlines. So yes, the employment opportunities are going to be there, and perhaps planning needs to look at the years ahead rather than where we are at now.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us on the show, Ashok. It was great to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Quentin, and good day.
Good day. That was Ashok Puduval, CEO of the Massey School of Aviation. Coming up on the show, we speak to Charlie Robinson, student representative on the Aotearoa Legal Workers Union National Executive. Following that, we speak to Patrice Lesueur about Edinburgh Realty's amended retraction to students. And then, as always, critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer joins us in the studio to talk about this week's issue. Right now, we have Baby Zionov with PJ Princess featuring Moody here on R1 News.
Aotearoa Legal Workers Union advocates for the rights of legal employees across the country, campaigning for salary consistency, workplace relationships and other issues lacking compliance with workers' rights. Yesterday morning, the union launched a nationwide campaign across the country's law schools, encouraging students to join their National Student Committee. The outreach program is an initiative actioned by students already in the union, looking to expand the student voice and support those moving into legal professions over the coming years. We are joined on the phone by Charlie Robinson, the student representative of the Aotearoa Legal Workers Union National Executive. Kia ora, Charlie.
Kia ora.
You're involved with the union individually and as a representative for the National Student Committee. Is the student arm primarily a means of introducing people to the union as a whole, or does it have its own advocacy agenda separate from the Aotearoa Legal Workers Union?
Yeah, both. So we do aim to increase both membership and awareness among students. We think that just our mere existence is incredibly helpful for students in terms of knowing that we're here to support them when they enter the profession. And making union membership seem obvious for when they do finally leave law school. But also there are some specific student elements of this new campaign. We're looking to create a lot of transparency around what working in the legal sector is really like. In a lot of the law schools, we get all of these recruitment talks from large law firms, and it can be really difficult to actually figure out what working as a lawyer or in the legal sector is going to actually be like. And so we're trying to break those barriers and allow for people to make a more informed decision when they actually leave law school.
Could you please describe the primary aims of the Aotearoa Legal Workers Union, specifically the National Student Branch?
Yeah, so the primary goal of the Aotearoa Legal Workers Union is to provide a safe, secure and inclusive workspace for all those in the legal sector. The student branch aims to equip students with the tools necessary to be able to critically evaluate their employment relationship after university. But then at the same time, we are a subsidiary of the ELWU, and so we work collaboratively on particular goals relating to students and young lawyers and,
Unionism is the organisation of workers banding together to achieve common goals. However, we generally tend to think of unionism in relation to the trades, giving power and collective bargaining ability to workers who may not otherwise have access to the resources to advocate or campaign for their rights. The legal profession doesn't immediately spring to mind when one thinks of disempowered or disenfranchised workers unable to advocate individually, perhaps because legal workers are specifically educated on human and workers' rights. Why is it important for there to be a union for legal workers?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, legal workers are certainly not the most disempowered or disenfranchised workers. But we do believe that unions are an incredibly important institution for all sectors and all workers across the motu. But in regards to legal workers specifically, junior lawyers and legal secretaries are commonly exploited with unrealistic workloads and subpar support networks for the amount of hours that they're expected to work. I mean, in our recent employment information report, we found that 83% of the people surveyed said that their mental health had suffered because of their work. And additionally, the legal sector, like most sectors in Aotearoa, have been exclusionary of women, people of colour, gender diverse and queer people. And so we also think that it's important to have a diverse and well-supported legal sector for everybody.
The issues you've just described potentially extend beyond just those in legal professions from law school. Is this union exclusive to law students, or could students from other departments with legal aspects, such as finance, politics or social work, be eligible to join?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, ELWU is restricted to law students, but the Aotearoa Legal Workers Union is for anybody working in the legal sector, so that would include in-house lawyers, legal executives, secretaries, accountants. I mean, anybody that's working in that entire sector can be involved with ELWU, just not necessarily with the student branch.
That's a very broad range of people who can take advantage of the program. And last question for you. 30 years ago, the Employment Contracts Act and Employment Regulations Act were brought in, drastically altering the ways workplaces and employers interacted. The executive summary of the Employment Contracts Act describes having removed obstacles to different types of employment contracts and working arrangements, but also admits to reducing legislative backing for unions. Would this union have been more or less necessary before these acts were initiated?
That's a very interesting question. I mean, I think that unions are always necessary, regardless of the time period. And, I mean, that 1996 Act absolutely gutted unions. I mean, union power comes a lot from statute, and it provides us with our ability to collectively bargain and to actively support our workers. And so, yeah, that was absolutely devastating. But, you know, when ALWU started in 2018, the employment landscape for junior lawyers especially was incredibly exploitative and unsafe. And this was an institutional issue that had existed far prior to the 1990s. And so, yes, I think the union would have been necessary back then, and it's necessary now, and it's going to be necessary looking into the future as well.
Ngāme here, Charlie. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
That was Charlie Robinson from the Aotearoa Legal Workers Union talking about the union's new initiative to engage law students across the country. Coming up, we have Patrice Lesueur, the OUSA residential representative, in the studio to talk about an amended email sent out by Edinburgh Realty to their tenants after a previous email breached the Residential Tenancies Act. First up, though, here is Evzra Phoenix with Storm here on R1 News.
chef has run through. Feeling queasy, my mind's in blue and bliss. From just one kiss, tisk, tisk. Eyes wander, body stoned. My mind travels all alone. Flicker, flicker, in the distance. Her eyes glisten and my body starts to listen. Breathe in, breathe out. Words spilling out my mouth. I thought I couldn't speak. I thought I couldn't breathe. I know I should've. I said I could've. I thought I would've. Push it, push it, till I crack. Push it, push it, till I crack, crack.
Sunny days just around the corner. Look up, you'll feel it warmer. Salute today. Keep on grooving with the light, don't let it fade.
How's the weather? What's my forecast? Love at long last. Love, love. It comes, it goes, it stays, it flows. Love arrives exactly when we need, and love leaves exactly when it must.
Sunny days just around the corner. Feel it warmer. Salute today. Keep on grooving with the light. Don't let it fade. Even rainy days are great.
Sunny days just around the corner. Sunny days just around the corner.
we did what the other expected.
You're listening to R1 News here on Radio 1. It is 20 to 12, and that song you just heard was Algis Harding with Fever. Before that, you had Getting Warmer featuring B from Mild Orange, and before that one was Ezra Phoenix with Storm. Edinburgh Realty has backtracked on its ultimatum to students after sending out a letter that violated the Residential Tenancies Act. In this letter to tenants, Edinburgh Property Management asked tenants to decide if they would be re-signing their property for 2023 by 5 p.m. May the 2nd. If tenants did not get in touch with Edinburgh by this time, Edinburgh would advertise their property for rent for the following year. Under the changes to the Residential Tenancies Act that came into force in February last year, tenants have until 28 days before the end of their tenancy to decide if they wish to stay. In this instance, the tenancy becomes periodic, meaning it has no fixed end date. Tenants and landlords can also choose to renew the fixed-term agreement rather than move into a periodic tenancy. Simply put, under the new regulations, landlords cannot make tenants leave at the end of their fixed-term tenancy unless the tenants agree or are being removed for a violation of the Residential Tenancies Act. According to John Harbrook, group manager in charge of property management at Edinburgh, the letter sent out to tenants was not consistent with tenants' rights under Section 60A of the Residential Tenancies Act, and an amendment was sent out to tenants on April 28th. This was 2 days after R1 News initially questioned Edinburgh on the legality of the letter, and 4 days before Edinburgh initially expected responses from students. Harbrook confirmed for R1 News that these flats would not be advertised as available for 2023 until Edinburgh had confirmed whether or not tenants would be staying for 2023 or leaving at the end of their fixed-term agreement. According to Harbrook, Edinburgh's aim is for students to be able to secure accommodation for 2023 as early as possible so that they can concentrate on their study for the rest of the year. Advertising for Edinburgh's flats for 2023 will begin on June 7th. The day before Semester 1 exams begin. We're joined in the studio now by Patrice Lesueur, Residential Representative for Otago University Students Association. Kia ora, Patrice.
Good morning.
Patrice, what do you think of this initial letter that was sent to tenants by Edinburgh?
Well, firstly, it's too early. So it's extremely early to be asking students whether they want to re-sign their flat. That's the main problem that I have with it. Obviously, also, it did violate the new section of the Residential Tenancies Act. So you can't issue an ultimatum saying, you need to tell us if you're going to re-sign by this date, because that's not actually legal. So that's my main impression of it. I would have liked to have seen it before they sent it out, or, you know, they should have sent it out a little bit later. It would have been nice if it was in Semester 2, but that's okay. That's what we can expect.
So do you think that property managers have a responsibility to understand the Residential Tenancies Act before sending out letters like this to students?
I mean, yes, absolutely they do. And I think I have a feeling that it's not like Edinburgh went out not knowing about Section 60A. I think they thought that what they were doing was completely legal, and at the end of the day they're trying to get as much certainty as possible for how many listings they're going to have and when. So it makes sense that they sent it out when they did. I know a lot of other property management companies have kind of erred on the side of caution and not encouraged students to sign agreements saying that you you agree to not continue into a periodic tenancy, therefore making the kind of ultimatum thing impossible. So it would have been nice if they had just done that and not pressured students either way. So, but it is very important that they're aware of the new law changes, which it's my understanding that a lot of property management companies are very confused by them, and I'm also very confused by them as well.
I've heard the same thing from a few different people. One thing that stood out to me in this email from Edinburgh was the person I was talking to claimed that OUSA and Edinburgh hadn't been negotiating, pushing back the start dates. Has OUSA been talking to Edinburgh about this?
Yeah, I mean, I've absolutely talked to Edinburgh. I had a very long conversation with a different Edinburgh manager, but they are right. By no means are we in some kind of formal negotiation. We're definitely just in, you know, I've only had a very, very long but informal conversation with Edinburgh. So I definitely have a lot more work to do in terms of outreach for different property management companies to sort of get that negotiation ball rolling.
And Edinburgh also questioned why they would negotiate pushing back these listing dates with OUSA. Do you think pushing back these dates so that the flat hunt becomes later in the year could be mutually beneficial?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is. I don't even, for the other property management companies that I've talked to, I haven't even really needed to sell the benefits to them. They've come to me and told me, like, we would actually like it to be in semester two, because it's a common belief among property management companies that students really want the listings as early as possible, and I can see that's what this guy from Edinburgh thinks as well. But actually, the mutual benefit is that when students aren't pressured so early, they form better friend groups. They've shored up their friend group by semester two. Often in first year, you've only known people for a few months, so you don't know what people are going to be like, and that causes a lot of falling out, which means that students will pull out of their flat agreement. They'll want to, you know, sign a different flat. You know, we want a 5 instead of a 4, or, you know, something like that. And that means that the property management company has to relist the property, which is a huge headache for them. So if flat listings are in semester two, there'll probably be a lot less of that.
Excellent. And final question for you today, Patrice. What do you make of Edinburgh's statement that their aim is for students to be able to secure accommodation for 2023 as early as possible so that they can concentrate on their study for the rest of the year?
I think that's a very unfortunate statement, because I think it very much misunderstands the entire flat hunting situation for students. I don't think a lot of companies really realise how much pressure actually looking for a flat is for students, having to not only go around and keep track of all the listings, be following up on property managers while you're trying to study, but as well being door knocked by people. It's a lot of pressure. So, and especially with Edinburgh releasing their flat listings and exams, I don't think that's very consistent with helping students focus on their study at all.
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us in the studio, Patrice.
No worries.
That was OUSA residential representative Patrice Lesueur talking about Edinburgh Realty's amended letter to tenants after a previous email violated the Residential Tenancies Act. Coming up here on the show, we speak to critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer about this week's issue. But first up, here is Chelsea Jade with Optimist here on R1 News. When your baby in recline,
We're joined in the studio now by critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer to talk about this week's issue, issue 9, the conspiracy issue. Morena Fox, great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So Fox, two pieces in the conspiracy issue really gripped me this week, and they were the features on vaping and on Big Honey, because neither of these were really things I would consider traditional conspiracy theories. So let's start with the vaping feature. What was the inspiration behind this?
So for conspiracy issue, we didn't really want to delve too much into the more dangerous conspiracy that we're seeing around. So we wanted to think about sort of operations that might be going on that might affect students around us that we might not be aware of. So with the vaping issue, we remembered a few years ago when suddenly in halls at university, we were getting stories about people receiving free vapes from vape shops. And that was just the vape, not the nicotine juice. And that sort of got us thinking about this whole advertising trick where in Aotearoa, you're allowed to advertise the physical vape, but not the vape juice, because only one of those is a nicotine product, which really opens the doors for some nefarious sort of advertising towards youth. And the piece was about how Big Tobacco has come in and bought all these vape companies. And as soon as that happened, the marketing shifted towards this younger, more vulnerable population that conveniently can't buy cigarettes.
But based on that market shift, do you think vaping is going to be, you know, a hot fad comes in real quick and then just dies out? Or do you think it could stay?
Well, it's extremely addictive.
Yeah.
So I reckon it's going to be around for the standard duration of a nicotine addiction, probably, at least.
Yeah. And so then Big Honey, it was something else. I can't say I was expecting that. I'm just going to have to let you run wild with this. What is Big Honey? Where did this come from?
Right. So none of us were really expecting this. This started as satire, but we've sort of accidentally drank our own Kool-Aid here. And I've bought into it. I reckon we're onto something. We were thinking about how, you know, that whole save the bees message has come up, and that doesn't really make sense because it can't be about supporting pollinators because there's plenty of other pollinators that aren't bees, and it can't be about supporting the environment because honeybees are not necessarily good for the environment. So the only thing that save the bees is really saving is the honey industry, which very conveniently around the same time the bee movie came out was at the height of colony collapse disorder in the United States, I'm fairly certain.
Do you think this is something that, you know, you've seen or could be seen in other areas of marketing too? I remember hearing something about Big Bacon in like 2010 when everyone became obsessed with bacon for a few years. Do you reckon that's kind of similar vein or?
Well, I mean, as you were saying before the show started, they had a surplus of pork products and then conveniently said, oh, well, maybe we could have a social media push to have all these bacon-loving products around. I don't see why that kind of PSYOP wouldn't be administered in all sorts of market shares across the country and the world. I just think this one's particularly interesting because it's a very climate-conscious, green, kind of like chic vibe that's going on. Mm. But I reckon we've all had the rug pulled out by these Big Honey agriculturalists.
Is Critic planning to do a similar marketing strategy? Just, oh, we're not going to run Critic anymore.
I don't think we have the requisite brain power to pull off such an elaborate scheme.
Very fair. And then my final question is, I mean, it's one of my favorite parts each week, Mr. Worldwide. This week's one looked brutal. What was your experience trying to find that?
Well, speaking of the requisite brain power, this took 3 weeks. This took a long, long time to get. I think it was from Char. I'm not sure, but if you're listening, thank you for a challenge. I have never not gotten one of these within 2 hours of receiving the email. This took 3 weeks. There is no text visible. There are no license plates visible, no signage, no flags. It is literally just a bunch of buildings on a hill with a mountain range behind it. And I spent hours looking for this one little what ended up being monastery. And we finally got it on some obscure tourism website from Australia about monasteries in India. And it was like number 6. It wasn't even in the top 3. So I went through the whole slideshow. But yeah, I was elated when we got it. We did get it.
Impressive.
That was Critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer talking about the conspiracy issue of Critic Te Arohi this week. I'm Kaya Kahurangi Jameson.
I'm Quinton Jane.
Tune in weekdays from 11 a.m. for R1 News here on Radio 1. Up next on the show, we have Rizzy Cooks with Strawberry Milk.
on my skin. It feels like strawberry milk flowing down my throat. It's pink inside this silk, and it somehow reminds me that I am here, evaporating still. And soon all the colors clear. And if I'm broken, maybe I just need some glue. If I'm lonely, baby, maybe I need a something new.
Te tautoko te reo irirangi kotahi ki te reo Māori.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.